Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, and I'm David Todd, for the moment, of Steelers Nation Radio. Dave, it's Season 3, Episode 1, as the Steelers reported for camp on Wednesday and had their first official practice yesterday, and today they'll put on the pads.
Absolutely, and you were out there yesterday. Compliment your work there, Steelers Nation Radio. For those of you listening out there, we're going to remind you of that quite a bit and get them some traffic over there, get David some more exposure over there. 2 to 4 today or daily, right?
Two to four daily during the week, and tonight I'll be on WPGB 104.7 with Dale Lawley from 6 to 8 from some bar up in the area, which I will get to you. If anybody's in the neighborhood and wants to get in, we will be tonight at the place called Falbo's, 6 to 8. So two shows, 2 to 4 on Steeler Nation Radio and on WPGB 104.7. Where the Pirates had their postgame show last year, 6 to 8 with Dale Lawley.
So if you're listening to this, if you go into training camp today and you get out of camp and want to go have a cold adult beverage, swing by Falbo's there, track down David Todd and tell him you said and tell him hi there. So
yeah, absolutely. That'll be good. We had a little rain this morning. It's clearing up. Practice opens at 2:55. Basically runs from 2:55 to 5. So we'll be there. I'll be on the air on the hill from 2 to 4 and then catch the end of practice, catch an interview, and then shoot on over to the Falbo. So, but, Dave, yesterday we did a little piece last night. I want to point people to that if they didn't see it. We did a quick 10-minute recap of yesterday's practice. Yesterday, as I mentioned, the guys were in helmet shorts and T-shirts. They ran a lot of skeleton drills, a lot of special teams work, and that's stuff, you know, the special teams work especially – they can do that stuff in a non-padded practice because it's really about timing and formation and doing things like that. And I spoke to Mike Tomlin after practice and was concerned about, you know, was curious as to whether not having as many padded practices would make it harder for him to evaluate talent and if he'd have to project more and think about potential more. And he seemed to think that wasn't going to be too big of an issue. They had plenty of practices to see guys in pads, and they would use the non-padded practices as more of to work on technique. And I definitely saw that yesterday. That's what was going on. You know, the highlights, John Mitchell doing a lot of one-on-one work with Steve McClendon, who very well could be the starter at nose tackle on opening day. And we saw the rookie offensive lineman work in. We talked about this on the piece last night, working in kind of as a 1B group. They had they had Essex and Ramon Foster at left tackle and right guard to start, and they would alternate in Mike Adams and David DeCastro. So good day, good first day of practice. Everybody out there, Heath Miller and Ta'amu had leg and foot, ankle and foot injuries, but not considered serious. And I would expect, you know, all 89 guys to be there today. As we know, Mike Wallace is not there. And, of course, Dave, the PUP list came out after we did our broadcast on Tuesday.
Yeah, and it get kind of the days mixed up here. I know you're working quite a bit right now. But, yeah, today on Tuesday, or actually on Wednesday, the PUP list came out. And it was as expected. You know, we talked about this on the podcast, the names that were going to litter this list. Three of them we knew for sure of. We knew Rashard Mendenhall, Casey Hampton, Max Starks, all coming off knee surgeries. Those were givens, and I, you know, we kind of talked in that podcast last week that, you know, it's not out of the question that James Harrison and Jason Worlds could show up on that list. Of course, Jason Worlds had the wrist surgery this offseason that kept him out of all the offseason practices. James Harrison, he was able to participate in the first OTA session, but did not since then. And, you know, that there was a kind of some red flags along the way there. And you, when I asked Keith Butler specifically, I think it was about Worlds, about and I think this was like the third OTA session or the mini camp session. Someone asked him specifically if he'd be okay by the start of training camp, and he really couldn't give a good answer on that. So those were the two more that added to it. And I guess the surprise, or at least the surprise in my mind, was DeMond Cromartie-Smith. I did not know that he had off-season surgery. At least I don't remember knowing that I knew. And, you know, I found that a little bit of a surprise. But as Tomlin said in that opening day press conference after the conditioning run, that Cromartie-Smith is very, very close. So a quick recap of what the PUP list is. You have the PUP active list, the PUP reserve list. The reserve list begins at the beginning of the regular season. The active list runs from the start of training camp until the start of regular season. If a player is not placed on active PUP at the start of training camp, he cannot be placed on reserve PUP to start the season. So that means if you show up at camp and a guy does not start on active PUP and he gets injured, you cannot throw him on reserve PUP and then at the start of the season. He must either go on injured reserve or stay on your 53-man roster. So a lot of people wonder if a player gets injured during training camp and does not start off on PUP, he can't be put on a regular season PUP. So that's why they'll do their due diligence, as Tomlin said. They'll bring these guys back slowly, make sure they have no setbacks, and that's why a couple of names like Harrison Worlds and Cromartie ended up on the active PUP list to start things off here.
Yeah, good explanation, Dave. That's important to understand that they do this at the beginning of camp because the ramifications, if they were to have a setback, and understand, everybody needs to also understand, is as soon as you practice, or you cannot practice until you're taken off that PUP list. So, you know, if there's a setback in the rehab process, it's not a problem. It's obviously is a problem, but it's not a problem in terms of the list. But once you come off the list, you can't go back on the list. It's then a decision about staying on the roster or injured reserve.
Absolutely. You hit it right on the head.
Dave, so we got into things yesterday. A couple funny things. You know, we had Brett Kiesel arriving on a tractor into camp. And we've seen, you know, in years gone by, Kiesel, I think, has come in a mini one year and some different things. There have been some funny guys coming in some funny vehicles. What was the story? Kiesel drove a tractor 20 miles or something?
I don't think he ever said in the interview that I saw. I don't think he said how far he drove it. He claimed that he drove it up the highway there. And but, you know, he has a tight affiliation with one of those. I don't have the name of that tractor place there, but I've seen the commercial with him on YouTube. All you have to do is Google Keys or look on YouTube for Kiesel and Diesel, I guess, commercial. And you'll find that place that he does the Kubota commercials for locally. So, you know, never hurts the people that you have affiliations with to get a little bit of extra attention there. And hey, Kiesel hands down wins the most creative arrival at training camp. I think over the years we've seen James Harrison, he showed up in a smart car one year. I think Ed Bouchette talks about a total story yesterday on the radio about a safety back in the Chuck Knoll days of showing up in an old pickup truck with beer cans in the back and all like that. So, you know, it's not surprising that one of them had a creative arrival to training camp.
Right. So guys are here. A couple notes that just a couple things maybe I didn't touch on last night. Jared Johnson, the number four quarterback in there, he is a big boy with a big arm. Didn't take a lot of the reps in the drills. It was definitely Byron in there and Charlie in there. I'm not even sure I saw Jared Johnson take a skeleton drill rep. But, you know, you see him throwing the ball around on the sideline. Derek Williams was there, Penn State boy. I was standing with Tom Bradley, and they had a nice chat. He's a guy, wide receiver out of Penn State, who was with the Lions. I think he was out of football last year, and he's trying to make it back as a free agent signee. You know, as I said, extra work with McClendon and Mitchell. We saw the guys returning punts. All the receivers were back there, and Chris Rainey was back there as well. They've worked with him on how he's catching punts, and he's such a small guy. I think there's some concern about him returning punts just getting beat up back there. So it looks like that job is Manny Sanders. Didn't see any kickoffs, so they didn't line up any of that. Drew Butler hit some good punts in practice. He's the guy competing with Kapanos.
What about Marquise Mays? Did you see him catching any punts?
Marquise Mays is wearing number 3 in camp. He's a small guy. He ran some drills. I didn't see him returning punts with that group, but he will, should be one of the guys who gets a look in that thing. It was just really the, I think they took the top three receivers back there, and they were the one kind of shagging punts. And then when they ran some skeleton stuff, Rainey joined them. But it really looked like Sanders and Brown were taking the bulk of the reps on the receiving. That's something we can get into, Dave, just as a topic. We talk about how important special teams are, and coaches talk about how important special teams are. But a lot of the time, we don't see them use their marquee players to be return guys, whether it be Rod Woodson or Santonio Holmes, or it looks this year like Antonio Brown. And the thought being is that being a returner is a bit of a dangerous job. I wonder about that. I don't know how often we see punt returners actually get injured. There are so many punts that are out of bounds. There are so many punts that go in the end zone. There are so many punts that are fair caught that the return opportunities are limited. So let's say, maybe they're one or two a game, and, they can be game-changing events, and I'm not sure it's not wise to use your best returner. I don't think it's going to wear out an Antonio Brown to return two punts, and I know he'd like to do it. What do you think about the risk reward in that situation?
Well, we kind of touched on this a couple of weeks ago there, but I can see why they're doing it because of the wear and tear factor. You've got all these guys running down 90 miles an hour after you.
Right.
With a head start is what I'm saying. Of course, on any pass play or any play in particular, you can have your entire career done. But, I think that if at all possible, you'd like to keep your star players kind of out of that type of situation, if at all possible. Now, there's going to be times, I think, and we'll see how Emmanuel Sanders does in this role, to start the season, which I fully expect he's going to win that both the kick and punt return jobs, unless he just flounders during the preseason. There'll be times where I think you'll see Antonio Brown back there to give him a spark. But I think just the overall, just kind of keeping him out of harm's way as much as possible is what they're trying to do with Antonio Brown.
Well, I understand what they're trying to do. I'm wondering if you think it's a good idea, in terms of not just the Steelers, just teams in general. It's an opportunity to have a game-changing play, and I think you'd probably want to have your best guys in there more often than not.
I think it's a team-by-team situation.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think you just got to go team-by-team, player-by-player, how important that player is elsewhere on the field.
So, Dave, another, I guess, entertaining is the way to describe the quote from James Harrison. I was talking to Tim Benz when I got up to camp yesterday, and there were some articles posted yesterday about concussions and the effect of things, and there was a comment in one of them by Ken Stabler, I guess, that said James Harrison is the kind of guy who's a repeat offender who should be banned from the game. So you know a lot about what's going on with Ken Stabler.
Yeah, I do. Many of you know I live down here in the panhandle of Florida, right there near the Alabama-Florida state line, and Kenny Stabler is from down this way, actually lives down in about Orange Beach area, which is right there on the Florida-Alabama state line. I did some research. I have a post up this morning on SteelersDepot.com to kind of fill everybody in, and if James Harrison just so happens to need to be informed of who Ken Stabler is. Of course, all those years he played with the Oakland or Oakland Raiders, Houston Oilers, and New Orleans Saints in the NFL, was drafted by the Raiders out of University of Alabama, where he played for Bear Bryant. But after or during his playing career, a lot of people don't know, and I have a link to this story. Back in, I think it was 79, Stabler was accused of inviting a Sacramento sports writer down to the Gulf Coast here, to finally do a one-on-one interview on him. And, there ended up being a cocaine bust, sort of. They had planted some cocaine in a rental car of this guy, allegedly. And, I don't know. You never know who might hear this podcast. But But anyway, the reporter gets pulled over, you know, after basically getting brushed off of the interview with Stabler and kind of framed. Now, of course, he got out of that because, you know, the police evidently got a quick tip, and they found that quite suspicious in itself. Sports Illustrated did a piece on it back then, and I have a link to that up on the site as well, too. So, you know, he was never charged. Stabler was not charged with anything as far as that, but it stayed as a shady thing on his record, you know, associated with him all these years. Stabler also has been arrested 3 times, David, for driving underneath the influence. One time right here in our hometown here of Pensacola, Florida, back in 1995. I think he pleaded no contest to that charge, you know, over the legal limit. In 2001, he was arrested again in Orange Beach, Alabama, where he lives. Had a possession of a legal prescription drug, or possession of a prescription drug that is illegal, I should say, reckless driving. He ended up getting a plea deal on that for them to drop the drug possession and the reckless driving charge. And if that wasn't enough, had two underneath his belt. He had a third DUI charge in Robertsdale, Alabama, which is very close to that same area. He ended up spending a night in jail on that and released on bond 12 hours later. But he ended up being acquitted of that charge because the judge, who many considered kind of shady in that area and a huge Alabama fan, said that police and prosecutors did not do enough to prove his case. If all that's not enough, Stabler is a known non-taxpaying SOB, if you will. And the IRS has caught up with him recently over the years. Finally took away both of his houses and sold them. To this very day, after all that, he still has a tax debt of, I believe, over $250,000 that they put him on a payment plan for. And based on what he makes, he'll never pay that off. And then I kind of end the post office. That is unless he gets any money out of this lawsuit. Which so happens to name James Harrison as a guy that should be kicked out of the league. So there's your Stabler to Harrison full circle, and now James Harrison will know exactly who Ken Stabler is.
Yeah. So,
And I'm guilty as charged. Back when I drank, David, a place called the Floribama, everybody's heard of it if they've been down to this area. A main watering hole of Kenny Stabler. I have been guilty of charged of buying of drinking a beer or eight with Kenny Stabler on my tab, of course.
All right, so we'll good entertainment there. So that was a funny piece of news. He said, "Who's Kenny Stabler?" But let's get into some of the football stuff as well, Dave. Kevin Colbert talked yesterday. I think everybody's now heard about the Mike Wallace situation. They're not going to negotiate with Wallace while he's not in camp. He's going to have to come into camp and sign his free agent tender. I don't know why people are kind of shocked at this in the media. I mean, the people are writing, wow, the Steelers are taking a hardball stance. You know, good for them, blah, blah, blah. This isn't anything new, guys. I mean, I think everybody knows the Steelers don't negotiate in training camp. We saw them negotiate with Woodley because he came in and he went to practice and they got a deal done. This is business. This is how the Steelers do business, like it or not. Wallace isn't here. He's not getting paid. He's apparently not getting fined. I'm not sure they're actually allowed to fine him because he's not under contract, as opposed to Maurice Jones-Drew, who is under contract, who can potentially be fined $30,000 a day. So Wallace isn't there, and Mike Tomlin is going to just do business as he needs to do business. But Kevin Colbert said they won't negotiate. So no surprise there. I guess the thing that is maybe more interesting when we think about what's actually going on and the salary cap and everything is he did address the cap credits thing. This is an area of your expertise as Omar Khan Jr. I think you got a good handle on this. So explain to us what he was talking about when he was addressing the cap credits.
Yeah, these cap credits were put in a new CBA as kind of a step up to the 2014 season. When that new TV money kicks in there, it's sort of a mechanism that teams don't have to use these. They are it's borrowed money from future cap years. The teams have to pay it back in years 2014 to 2017. Now they can stretch out whatever they have borrowed up until that point. Last year, it was $3 million credits, which we've talked about previously on the podcast, and and I've written about quite, you know, last year quite a bit. Now, they use those on three veteran players. Those veteran players, I believe, have to have five accrued seasons and all like that. Must be on the roster, I believe, at the start of training camp to use them on. The Steelers took advantage of that last year. Remember, they were right up against the cap last year. They basically gained about, you know, they did gain $3 million in cap space that way. Now, this year, the big thing, you know, everybody, as we've always said, Dave, and I think you put this out there more than anybody, the salary cap space number is always kind of a moving number because it depends on who's including what, who's reporting that a team has X amount of cap space, including, you know, this rollover or not including cap credits or whatnot. I've sort of been accounting for these cap credits all along, which gives you a firmer realistic, you know, picture of how much cap space is available. Basically, Colbert came out yesterday, and the big question I've had all along that I think now has been answered for me is when do they have to designate the use of these three? Well, this year it's $3.5 million credits that they can use on players.
And do they have to assign them to certain contracts?
Yes, they do. They have to assign them to specific players. Last year it was Casey Hampton, James Ferrier, and Hines Ward that they used the $3.1 million credits on. This year, see, because I think you can wait up until the start of the season, you know, to when you move over from the rule of 51 to the full 53 cap number there. That's why you can wait, because let's face it, you could have a veteran in camp that you might think that you're going to use this cap credit on, and you end up having to cut them.
Yep.
So, you know, it makes sense to have to wait to designate these, and then at the start of the regular season, that's when the credit will kick in as far as space goes. So they have $3.5 million credits, as I said, at their disposal this year. Mark Cabali reported yesterday that somebody asked Colbert this, and this is a good thing, finally, that, the media finally kind of catching on. Cabali's been good about talking cap with me all the time as well, too. And it wouldn't surprise me if Cabali was the one to ask this question. These are the type of questions that I like to see the media ask like that. And I bet Colbert was kind of shocked that someone would ask him this type of question. But the Steelers will take advantage of that. Basically, what it means is they gain $1.5 million cap space by using all three of these. Once again, they have to be paid back in from years 2014 to 2017.
Right, and obviously the thought being that, you know, we thought the cap would be higher this year and next, and it now looks like, you know, we may be looking until 2015 when the cap goes up, but we're not talking about a lot of money, the $3 million last year, $1.5 million this year, so probably look to, you know, take advantage of that as best they can. Now, as you said, it hasn't been done, so maybe they'll decide they can use one, two, or three, right, Dave? They don't have to use all or none.
Right, they don't have to use all three of them. You know, they can use one on one player for $500,000 if they want. Now, Colbert did say yesterday too. Right now, they're fine on cap space, and that's, you know, that's something that me and you've been shouting about all along. That they're fine on cap space. He did say, however, that there could be a little bit of restructuring, I guess is what he meant, should they come to a deal with Mike Wallace. Looking at the numbers, I'm not thinking that they're, you know, I don't think they're going to have to restructure based on what the contract that I think if Mike Wallace ends up getting, he's going to get. Now, will they still use the $3.5 million credits even if, you know, when you look at their numbers right now, they've got quite a bit of cap space right now after letting Jonathan Scott go, something that we haven't seen about this time of year in a while, this much cap space. So it'll be interesting to see if maybe, I don't know, he came out yesterday and said he was going to use them. So that makes me feel like, hey, if they got them at their disposal, you never know what type of injury that they might suffer during the year, might have to go out and sign a free agent, you know, if they don't have Mike Wallace under contract and have that heavy cap hit, you know, hanging out there eating up some of that space.
Right. Good explanation, Dave. Another topic that we touched on when we were going through some of these camp battles is a guy, Brandon Johnson. And we talked about it a little bit on Tuesday, but again, that was before the PUP list came out. And we saw that two of the backers were on there for sure in Worlds and Harrison, some special teams guys in Damon Cromartie Smith and So it becomes a little bit more clear why they signed this guy in the offseason, because I think you and I were both surprised that a guy the Bengals had released, who's really a special teams guy, was brought into camp.
He's been an intriguing guy for me. Not that I don't think he's a good player, because he played in the Bengals, you know, that 4-3 kind of stack system, can play both inside and outside. Not a known starter, a good special teamer guy, a guy that can come off the bench. And I always kind of wondered all along how this guy was a fit. Now, the Steelers had originally worked him out back in the beginning of May along with Matt Roth. And at that time now, and it's not unusual for the Steelers to keep the Rolodex updated in May, but I found the linebacker position kind of peculiar because of all the people. This was after the draft, all the people that they had on the roster. It just didn't look, it just didn't smell right. Well, we get through the, we get to the OTA session, still no addition as far as that goes, and that's even after Worlds and, Harrison kind of comes up lame with the knee problem. Well, you fast forward to the minicamp situation. You start, I believe, at the start of minicamp is when Brandon Johnson was signed. And he did not get much work, of course, in minicamp because you had hat day in there and everything else that goes on with that. So, my question at that time was, okay, well, they must know something about Worlds and Harrison possibly not being able to begin camp on time. It'll have to be placed on PUP. On top of that, kind of wondered where he fit. Do they consider this guy an inside guy, or do they consider him an outside guy in the 3-4? Well, come to find out, in some interviews that Johnson had did, they basically wanted to play outside in the 3-4, particularly it looks like the left outside spot. He admits to not rushing the passer much over the course of his career. Now, he's a big kid. He got some size to him, but he also said, in addition to not rushing the passer much in Cincinnati, that, they've kind of asked him to bulk up a little bit before camp. So that's one guy, and I mentioned this to you yesterday on the little mini podcast that we did wrapping up yesterday. When you're out there the next few days, this is a guy I'd be interested to get a report on. Is this guy running on the second team behind Lamar Woodley at left outside linebacker? He's just a peculiar fit, and now it makes more and more sense now that we know who's on the PUP now. But, fans probably would like to – this is a guy that has a legitimate shot possibly at the 53-man roster. And we'll rely on you a little bit to be our eyes out there on this.
Yeah, one of the good things about yesterday is I only did an hour show, and I got to go down to practice right as they got started. So I'm going to have to take some binoculars up there with me today, because I'll obviously be on the air 3 to 4, hopefully outside overlooking the fields, but only going to get an hour as opposed to 2 of watching what's actually taking place. So good and bad involved with that, but we'll take the good with the bad. Dave, any other topics that you want to hit on here?
What else do we have happen out there? Keenan Lewis, I think, is still saying that Mike is going to show up, or he, expects.
Yeah, I laughed at that. They said best friend says Wallace, ready to come to camp. And the quote from Keenan Lewis was, yeah, Mike's working hard every day. He wakes me up. He's ready to go. He's in good shape and all that, so he's going to be here any day. And I just kind of chuckled. I mean, the two are not related. I mean, there is a point in time where he's going to come to camp, and I'm not that concerned about it. If he's not in camp in 10 days, I'll take note. But I don't expect for him to maybe be here the first week, but probably after that. But having Keenan Lewis comment that he's working out, and ergo, he is going to be in camp soon. Those two things don't equate to me.
Well, he's a childhood friend of his and works out with him all off season back in New Orleans. But with all that said, it doesn't matter what Keenan Lewis says. I mean, I posted about this as well, too, because it is a little newsworthy when a player says something like that. But on the top of it, though, it does not matter when or what Keenan Lewis, when he thinks Mike Wallace is going to report. The only thing that matters is when Mike Wallace decides he's going to report. And,
right.
Fans, boy, Dave, all over Twitter, man. And one of our longtime listeners, too, Bob, we read an email how angry he was at Mike Wallace, too. I'm not ready to grab the pitchforks like everybody else with Mike Wallace. Sure, we all know as fans how this whole thing was probably going to play out if indeed Mike Wallace did not show up by reporting time. We knew the stance that the Steelers were going to take in regard to that. Everything's playing out just fine. Mike Wallace is just driving home his point here at the beginning of the camp that he's not happy. Colbert laid down the law as expected yesterday. So there's not going to be, you know, there's no negotiation to do here. Either Wallace shows up over the next few days or he doesn't. And I think he's going to report. Now, if after a week rolls around and he is missed, okay, start getting on his case then. Start really throwing a few barbs his way. But until that happens, you know, let this thing play out the way they're trying. You know, he's trying to negotiate it, even though he's doing a poor job of it, and he's not going to win. I still stand by to my firm belief that he's going to be in here in the next couple of days. Although you don't think he's going to get a long-term deal, I think that's still a possibility of that happening. So take it easy on the guy until the first week gets behind us here.
And let's get to some of the emails, because we tell you we're going to get to these, and we've been a little negligent. So I just wanted to mention a couple. We had Chris give us a heads up from a place called Bury in South Wales in the UK, where the Olympics are taking place over in London. Wales, obviously, not in London, but nearby. So I wanted to give a shout-out to Chris Hanman. Thanks for the note. Got a great letter from a guy, Matt, in Seattle. And I got to actually read this, Dave, because this guy's in Seattle, and he said, you know, his dad's from family, but they live in Seahawks country. And he points out, he gives us a bunch of bullet points to tell us how much of a Steeler fan he is. And he says, I get a Steeler flag flying outside my house every day. I frequent Kimo von Olhoffen's restaurant here in town. My wife is from Georgia, but is converted from the Falcons to the Steelers and wears her Polamalu jersey every Sunday at the disgust of her parents and brother. One of our best friends moved from Pittsburgh to Washington State where he was six, and he rocks a Steelers tattoo. I played fantasy football last year and passed on Ray Rice in the second round. I was denied service by fair-weather Seattle fans at three gas stations and a grocery store when I tried to buy some beer before Super Bowl 40 in my Heinz Ward jersey, and my son was wrapped in a terrible towel when he was born and brought home in a Steeler onesie. Great stuff, Matt, in Richland, Washington. Thank you for that.
We got another one here. We got today because we put the call out to listeners that let us know where you are. Donald Murphy. He's from Beaver Falls, but he now lives in Aqua. I'm going to say this wrong. You know I am. Iwakuni, Japan.
Iwakuni, Japan.
About approximately 52 kilometers south of Hiroshima. I don't know what a kilometer is.
Yeah, about 30 miles.
Lives next to the Marine Corps Air Station out there. So, Donald, hey, we appreciate that. Japan, David, they listen to the Terrible Podcast in Japan.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome.
We also got, you mentioned Chris Hanman in South Wales. We got one just yesterday from Tom Bridge. Where's Tom from? Manchester.
He's from Manchester, England, right?
Manchester, England sent us a nice long email there. So, it's exciting to get these type. We got a voicemail on our hotline too, David, and we're going to have to read that transcript because we're running out of time on this show on the next one here. But wants us to talk a little bit about options if Mac starts or Mike Adams are not ready for that left tackle spot. He wants to talk a little bit about the option of Marcus Gilbert sliding over there. So even our hotline is lighting up. I believe this caller was from New York or around that area there. So people keep sending the emails. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Hey, follow David Todd on Twitter, too, at Hammer Speaks. He's got a Pirates account. DT on Pirates. He's doing work for Steelers Nation Radio. What's that Twitter handle, David, for Steelers Nation Radio?
At Steelers N Radio, the letter N, at Steelers N Radio.
And also listen to, he's right. Listen to David on Steelers Nation Radio during the training camp on from 2 to 4. I'm not sure if they're going to get replays of that podcast up on their site. David, if you talk to those guys, you might want to suggest that they throw up, copies of the show up on the website.
Yeah, I think they run that. They run it in a loop, so it should be up there. You should be able to hear it. It's iHeartRadio app. It's called Black and Gold Radio, and everywhere else it's Steelers Nation Radio. So you can check it out there. And As we've mentioned, there's the donation button on PayPal, or you can, or excuse me, donation button on Dave Stite, or you can hit the send on PayPal to the admin Steelers Depot. And Dave, I think that's going to wrap us up for today, as I got to, you know, get in the car and head up to Latrobe.
Yeah, we'll be listening to you, Dave, and maybe you'll be able to join me this evening for a quick little wrap up. Maybe not. I won't hang you.
Maybe we'll give you one over the phone on the drive home.
All right, that sounds good then. And you know, I appreciate everything you do. You did a good job yesterday.
All right, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast, Season 3, Episode 1, with Dave and Dave.